the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to Don't Get Left in the Dust, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is Paula G for Don't Get Left in the Dust, Unleashing the Power of Entrepreneurship. Our topic today is a continuing series, Business Implication of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, Part 2. We're going to, pretty much the theme is going to be dominated by the year 2013. We'll touch on the changes that will happen just on the surface for 2014. Our returning guest is Michael Salisbury of the Human Resource Alliance. And HRA is a full-service human capital management company capable of satisfying any of your human resource management and administrative needs. We can manage projects, administrate HR functions, provide a variety of services, or supply world-class business advice, support, and savings. If you'd like to get in touch with Michael to help you in human resource in your company, you can contact them at www.hralliance.biz, and also he has a blog, hralliance.blogspot.com. Phone number is 818-970-0730. Our second guest, which is online, is Nathan Ackert, and he is the Vice President of Employee Benefits, Orion Risk Management Insurance Solution. Nathan is a graduate of Western Washington University in economics and is a successful employee benefits broker with an extensive background in designing, marketing, and servicing employee benefits. His experience includes alternative funding arrangements, consumer-driven health plans, fully insured plans, and human resource compliance and benefit administration technology solutions. Nathan delivers creative plan solutions, guides his clients on compliance and legal issue, improves his clients' employees' benefit programs, act as an employer and employee advocate, and enhances his clients' employee education program. Nathan served on the board of directors of the Professionals and Human Resource Association and is the immediate past chairman of the PIHRA District 1. Michael and Nathan, especially Michael, this is your third time. Welcome back.
Thank you, Paula. Happy to be here.
Nathan, are you still with us? He's online.
Yes, I am. Glad to be here as well.
Welcome to the show. I just want to do, with Michael, I want to talk back. The last time you were here was on 10/21, and we talked about a large percentage of it, the why of the Affordable Care Act, or what we call Obamacare as well. And then we got into the law a little bit on how it affects and some of the taxes and penalties. And again, for our audience, we're going to look at the business. This is the business implications from the business perspective. If you are a small business owner, as well as medium size, how this is going to affect your business. And we're going to cover mostly 2013. So for Michael and Nathan, I want to go into the what. We did the why a lot, Michael. So if Nathan, can you give me, what is it, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, intention of the law, and overview? And as I've stated to both of you, I'm coming from a perspective of the general public that mm-hmm. I really need a huge education and working to be a small business owner. So let's kind of go into the overview, and then we'll go deep into our discussion. Nathan, could you?
Yeah, gladly. It's so the Affordable Care Act, as it's been modified from for many of us, just in common language, the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act, officially. So ACA, we will call it here going forward, or healthcare reform. It essentially, in design, its intention initially, as we all learned through media, was to, as the title says, make coverage, make healthcare more affordable to the average citizen, and of course the delivery system that the United States has been under primarily for private insurers is through the employer. that goes back many years in history, not to go into that in any great detail on this program. However, that being a delivery system, ACA, or healthcare reform, has sought to create a more affordable opportunity for individuals through their employers, as well as on an individual basis through state exchanges, to obtain coverage and therefore be able to receive medical care that's insured. And so for the small employer, and for today's discussion as it relates to healthcare reform, the small employer will be 50, we'll define it as 49 employees and under, and then those above 50 and more, the impacts that healthcare reform will have on the organizations at that level, which are referred to as the larger employers, will shed some light on that and hopefully provide a little bit of guidance to the small group employers as well as the large group employers. But essentially, there's several aspects to the law that in some ways create advantages for the small group employer, and that, again, that's the 49 employee and under group, where there are some advantages in potential tax credits for employers with 25 or less employees, tax credits on their premiums that they pay toward their employee coverage, along with some other incentives that are built in to create affordability and access to coverage.
As I look at this, I know we're coming from the perspective of a business owner, but even a person who is an employee, they need to kind of educate themselves too if they're applying to a company to see with the changes how they're going to negotiate what benefits they want to get. So this can help as well. Do you see that as well, Nathan? And Michael, you can jump in anytime.
Yeah, this certainly. Paula, the idea really behind healthcare reform ultimately is playing out to create a more enhanced coverage, or not only enhanced, maybe the better way to say it is expanded coverage for Americans. So as we've heard in media, as the discussion has gone on in the political arena, there are approximately 25 million uninsured Americans. Mm-hmm. And the question is, how do we extend coverage to them so that they don't find themselves in a detrimental situation financially, where they don't have coverage through an insurance carrier, and if they have a catastrophic medical condition or injury, then what, right? And so this extends, healthcare reform, that is, extends coverage in a way we've never seen before in the history of our country, so that these 25 million individuals that are not covered can access coverage, either through their employer or through, as we know now, the state exchanges under development.
Okay.
And there are two levels. So there will be a federal exchange that will be available in states that may not yet or may not choose ever to participate by developing a state exchange. And then there are the state exchanges, such as here in California, Covered Californians, they call it, or SHOP is an acronym as well, that's come from the state exchange that's under development here in California, that individuals will be able to go in, as well as small group employers, to a website, purchase coverage on an individual or employer base through that state exchange, and thereby have coverage available to them. And there's a lot more behind it and to it, but that's the basic approach for an individual now who doesn't currently have coverage. And then along with that, there will be an incentive, well, I guess is one way to term it, for individuals by way of the individual mandate, or a fee, I guess as the Obama administration terms it. Really, most individuals see it as a penalty if an individual does not purchase coverage they are therefore not covered through an insurance plan, that would be that individual then would be on the hook, so to speak, for that penalty. Individual mandate starts out in 2014 at $95 annually, and then it will move up subsequent years from $95 in 2014 to $325 in 15 and $695 in 17. So it'll increasingly get more costly not to carry coverage.
Michael, you want to add to that, jump in and put...
Yes, let me put things in perspective. The government has created some standards by which the healthcare opportunities that are available to employees can be provided through employers. First of all health care plans have to meet what is known as essential health benefits, unless they're grandfathered. But I'm going to try to focus on what applies in most cases rather than the exceptions, because it's so easy to get lost in this law. So the first requirement is that essential health benefits must be provided. And they include simple things as emergency services, maternity and newborn care, prescription drugs, etc. So these are very clearly spelled out. Secondly, there are three levels of plans that are available. Silver, bronze, and Nathan, what's the third one? Do you remember offhand?
There'll be actually four levels, yes, and you're right to say bronze, silver, gold, and platinum levels, running from 60% on up to 90% actuarial value, covering, as Mike, you had said earlier, the essential health benefits of the plan.
So basically this means that an employer can offer different tiers of benefit levels to the employees, and in a sense, those tiers mean that the employer is going to pay for more depending on the level of the plan. Obviously, a platinum plan is going to offer a much richer plan to the employees than a bronze plan. So the government, in its wisdom, has come up with this concept that plans need to have these minimum requirements, and if these minimum requirements are met, then tiers of programs can also be established.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I wanted to get into, you mentioned, Nathan, and Michael can go into the controversy, the mandate for a lot of us, because the U.S. Supreme Court said that the Affordable Care Act is constitutional. Can we go into that, the penalty, if people do not have, this is what's caused the discussion, won't affect until 2014. Can you, both of you, kind of go in detail of what this mandate, there seems to confusion, is it a tax rate, a penalty? Let's kind of break it down if we can.
Well, let me jump in here real quick. I'll have Nathan get into the detail, but there is no question that from any perspective, this is a tax. And it's a mandated tax. And you should recognize that there are literally dozens of taxes associated with this law. In addition to the taxes, there are also penalties. So, for example, a tax applies to companies that are medical device providers. And the government has imposed a tax on the sale of medical devices that every time somebody rings up a transaction, there is a percentage associated with that transaction that will be added to the federal coffers. Penalty.
Just real quick, Mike, to that point, interesting, I noticed somebody recently had posted on Facebook a receipt from an outdoor sporting goods store, and in there, the medical device tax was line itemed on the retail receipt. So interesting that a medical device sold through an outdoor sporting goods store retailer, that cost is being shown, exampled in that receipt, as passed on to the end consumer. Interesting way of communicating that this particular store chose, but just an anecdote worth noting.
Well, it is a good one, because simple things like orthodontic appliances are still being evaluated. To what degree do they apply in the definition of a medical device or not? And so that has yet to be resolved. But the point is that there are taxes associated with this particular law. The penalties, a good example of a penalty is that if an employer who qualifies with over 50 employees and does not provide the essential benefits to their workforce, then they will be suffer a penalty of at least $2,000. And there's a somewhat complicated formula there that subtracts the first 30 employees. But nevertheless, the point is there are both two sources of revenue that have been incorporated into this law. One are taxes, frequently referred to as fees, and penalties.
And Paula, you had mentioned earlier, there has been some controversy, obviously, as this was escalated to the Supreme Court as to its constitutionality. Of course, it's been upheld. There are still some states contesting this. However, as we go forward, clearly it will apply and will be charged. And so whether an individual sees it as a tax, a fee, something that's necessary in order to provide or extend the opportunity for coverage to all Americans, all individuals, and those 25 million are the ones that have been mentioned most often in the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's really at $95 annually for an individual, not compelling for most in the younger age brackets, right? That would look at that and say, well, gee, if I only have to pay $95 penalty, why would I purchase coverage when I didn't plan to anyway? That's going to cost me, let's just use a round number, if their employer here in Southern California provides them a minimum essential health benefit plan, that let's say the HMO plan premium is $300,
yeah,
and the employer is providing for 50% of the premium,
mm-hmm,
that individual has another $150 monthly that they would be responsible for paying, and so they do. Well, you add that up, and the cost for that individual going to be significantly more to carry the coverage if that individual didn't prior to now carry coverage, or prior to 2014, I should say, then why would $95 compel them? So the broader concern on this is, as the state exchanges are concerned, the insurance industry in general, they calculate risk, the actuaries calculate risk based upon pool of individuals, ultimately that makes up those individuals make up that pool, and their desire is to have the risk spread across a pool of individuals that are both healthy, and of course you're going to have the unhealthy, maybe the age where their costs are significantly greater on an annual basis for healthcare and the cost of the system. So that individual mandate, it's a real concern as to how that compels individuals that are healthy, younger, that will balance out that pool of risk.
Uh-huh.
And therefore, what are the impacts on those state exchanges, the pool of risk that the insurance carriers are going to be bidding for and providing coverage to the state exchanges, too? And so that'll have implications over time. Unknown, certainly, but concerning as well.
Can you go more into what these state exchanges are? Again, I'm coming from a perspective of complete ignorance. What is involved in this?
Well, essentially, Paula, the state exchange is simply a marketplace that is transparent to the extent that, for example, right now, when you go to purchase auto insurance,
mm-hmm,
if you call Farmers, Farmers is going to have a discussion with you, and a result of that discussion will be a quote. And you'll cover topics that you may or may not be familiar with, bodily injury, liability, comprehensive collision, things of that nature. And so you'll come out of that discussion with a quote, but you're probably not sure exactly what it is the elements of the quote entail. The exchange is going to be, or is designed to set up so that the provisions that I mentioned, such as emergency care, etc., are spread out. Imagine an Excel spreadsheet where you have the provisions on the left, the different providers on the right, and then the degree or details of coverage on the spreadsheet. So that as a consumer, the concept is that you will be able to select from the exchange in a transparent manner which option, which carrier makes the most sense for you, both in terms of cost and some of the nuances associated with coverage. So the concept puts the decision maker, the employee, in a position where they're empowered to make an intelligent decision comparing one option to the other.
Okay. Thank you, because I was wondering what that is. I want, since this discussion is on businesses and we're talking 50 less and 50 more employees, let's go into, I want to get into the implications, and we're covering 2013, and as we have talked about before in the other show with Michael, and now that the Affordable Care Act, ACA as we're going to be calling it, is going to be going through the next 6-8. I think even some of the information was 2020 of the changes in healthcare. So what are the implications in 2013 for businesses, both 50 and below and 50 above? Nathan, do you want to take that first, and then Michael can kind of jump in?
Yeah, the 2013 is important on one level for businesses, because you look at it as your footprint year, right? And an employer now, based upon what their plans are, their costs, they're going to be moving into 2014, looking at this as a footprint year, meaning is it affordable? What adjustments will we need to make coming into 2014 as an employer's plan renews? Let's say it's January 1st, 2014. Well, now you have to measure it to be sure it's affordable. In other words, are the premiums affordable to your individual employees? And there's a calculation to measure this. And so employers will now be measuring affordability of plans. They will also be measuring whether their plans have the essential health benefits necessary to comply with health care reform. And I would say in terms of essential health benefits, the carriers have essentially structured the plans, the provisions therein, according to health care reform requirements. So not a lot an employer needs to do on that basis. When you look at it from a grandfather plan perspective, there are some provisions that will not be required in a grandfather plan, but for purpose of this discussion, not to go into those on any depth, the thing that an employer will want to make sure they're aware of is, okay, now if we adjusted our flexible spending account, our FSA plan, to be at a maximum of $2,500. No more, whereas before an employer could allow $3,000 to be deducted toward their FSA account pre-tax, or $5,000. There wasn't a maximum limit. It was what the employer decided they would allow their employees to deduct to a maximum level. Now, healthcare reform is requiring no more than a maximum of $2,500. Interesting part of healthcare reform, because flexible spending accounts have been a tool that we've been able to use as individuals to mitigate costs of medical care, right? Even items that were over the counter, Band-Aids and aspirin and so forth, could have been purchased by our flexible spending account, could have been utilized to make purchases that would have been tax-free. That was essentially the purpose of the FSA. So thereby reducing costs by a margin. Well, that's been reduced in the healthcare reform legislation. And so another provision that's important to make note of in 2013 is the employers now will need to notify employees by written communication of the state exchanges. The communication should include how to access information on state exchanges, what will be available through them, and other necessary information will be required to be in those notices as well. Initially, that was required to be communicated to employees by the employers as of March 1st, this in 2013. It's now been delayed, as many of the provisions within healthcare reform have been. This has also been delayed. We don't have the specific date yet until when, but since the state exchange is expected to be open on October 1st, we'll expect to have a date here sometime forward. The employer notices to their individual employees of the state exchanges will be calendared here probably sometime, by summertime. But as the state exchanges open up, presumably on October 1st, for effective plan dates of January 1st, 2014, employees are going to need that information and come to understand how to access coverage. Employers thereafter, they're not required to provide comprehensive information on the on the state exchanges, but certainly employees will be asking questions as they have all along, because there's a lot of confusing information involved in this 2,400 plus page legislation.
Let's go into, there was a part of this for businesses, a tax credit. Can you go into specifics? And Michael, I'll let you lead that on the tax credit part of the implications.
Well, the tax credit applies to relatively small employers. But I'd like to take advantage of the question to turn things around and talk about tax penalties, because there's a lot more of those. For example, let me just give you one particular example that just warms the cockles of my heart. There is a fee that began in 2012 that is applied to each covered person for that particular plan year. And that fee is, interestingly enough, designed to reimburse the insurance carrier for their ability to cope with Obamacare. And this cost goes up in 2013 100% to $2. Now, that doesn't sound like much. And by the way, it's also intended to go up in 2014. It doesn't sound like much, but the prediction is that it's going to raise $14 billion, and that money is going to go to the insurance carriers so that they can accommodate the administrative requirements of coping with the law and its miscellaneous implications. So you can see why talking about the penalties is much more fun.
Mike's favorite subject, clearly.
Would you like to add to that or challenge that?
I cannot challenge it, because he is
absolutely right.
Speaking factually, no doubt. To add to that is, and it's interesting, week by week, as in being an employee benefits business, we're serving clients throughout the Southland here, and we typically are serving employers that are on average 50 employees on up to several thousand. So we work with small groups that are as few as 10 employees, right on up to a few thousand. But so we're dealing with all aspects of this law, and our clients are asking us, the clients meaning the employers, they're asking us, well, how do we guide our employees too as it relates to the exchanges?
Yes.
And so we're being looked to as a resource, not only for the employer, but also how can you help our employees that would be seeking coverage if we're not going to continue sponsoring a plan? Can you support them with education, communication, and understanding of the state exchanges and so on? But another tax, to use Mike's term, tax or penalty, of course, there's a $63 charge that we know has surfaced out of legislation that will be applicable to all covered employees on a sponsored plan as well, starting in 2014. And so it's important in 13 as well for employers who, I would tell you, probably 97-98% of employers don't have knowledge of this fee, this tax that will apply. $63 per employee, it's $5 and some odd cents a month per employee, or $63 a year. Presumably that charge will be reduced to, I believe it's $40 in 2015, and we'll see where it goes thereafter. But that's a significant cost in an employer's budget as well, beyond the rising premiums that, as we've seen, have gone up several thousand dollars since the law was signed into, since the legislation was signed into law March 23rd of 2010. The family premiums we've seen gone up several thousand dollars annually just since then. And so that penalty, that gets passed on. An employer, in order to maintain profitability, in other words, to stay in business, just like the example I used prior, the retailer, they passed it on, the cost of the medical device tax by way of healthcare reform. They passed that on to the end consumer, and they line item that. How much more will that happen in the cost of, food and as I say, food, I think of restaurants who traditionally, most restaurants are not providing health benefits across their entire employee population, oftentimes only in management. But you can imagine now as our economy goes, how many employers in all industries will have to pass on some of those costs to the end consumer. So significantly impactful to everyone.
I think that's, as you say, this act is a lot of complexities and hidden things we do not know. Michael and Nathan, we're going to take a break for just a couple of minutes, and we'll come back. And what I want to talk about, we could probably talk about the taxes and penalties for the next year or so. I would like to get more into a little more specifics, including compliance risks and other items that will affect 2013, and maybe touch a little bit in 2014 if we have time. So for Michael and Nathan, hang in there. For everybody out there, this is Paula G for Don't Get Left in the Dust. Our theme today is Business Implications of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, Part 2. Our guest is returning guest Michael Salisbury from HRA, which is the Human Resource Alliance. You want to get in touch with them to help you with any human resource capital management for your company. You can get in touch with them at www.hralliance.biz. Our special guest is Nathan Akrit, who is the Vice President of Employee Benefits, Horizon Risk Management Insurance Solutions. If you want to get in touch with him for their service for both helping employers and educating employees, Nathan, it's orion.com. Is that correct on your website?
Yes, orionrisk.com.
Orionrisk.com, so that if you can get in touch with them there. So everyone hang in there. We'll be back in just a few. This is Paul G for Don't Get Left in the Dust.
You're listening to Don't Get Left in the Dust, right here on LA Talk Radio.